Hi, my name is Michael Kremer, and welcome to the podcast series where I talk to leading industry experts about how property can help business perform, with a real focus on what that means for the employee and how they work. Obviously, we're in a time now then when we've needed to figure this out more than at any other point, probably in any of our lifetimes. And this distributed workforce that we now have across all of our companies is the thing that we're thinking about the most. And what we're going to do today is talk about the process of work rather than real estate, because we feel that this is an incredibly important area that will in some ways determine how much home working can continue and how much we need to bring people back into an office. To do this, I have with me two people from INSEAD University, Panish Puranam, who's the Roland Berger Professor of Strategy and Organization Design, and Marco Minervini, who's a postdoctoral fellow at INSEAD Organizations and Algorithms. It's my pleasure to have you both on the air. Panish, welcome to you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Marco, good to be talking with you again.
Thank you.
Great. So maybe to kick off, we can start thinking about the research and the process of work. So the research that you're involved in around this distributed workforce. Panish, can I get you to kick off?
Sure. So remote working is not an entirely new phenomenon, and we've been actually studying versions of it for a while. So at some level, if you work for a multinational company, or even for a company with multiple branches within one country, you're familiar with remote working. And we've actually looked at it very closely in contexts like offshore software development and in open source online communities, where the standard mode of working is remote. And looking at all of those different contexts has taught us quite a few things. There are challenges with working remotely. The most important of these simply have to do with the poor quality of face-to-face communication, even with the best video conferencing technology. So there are real limits to how people understand each other, how quickly they can form trust with each other, how much they can infer about background context when they're talking to somebody. And this has been well known and has not really changed, even though video technologies have changed for the better for the most part. The other big problem with working remotely is you miss out on the random interactions that happen in an office. So these are the congregations around the coffee machine or the people you run into around the elevators. That doesn't happen. And that's quite important, actually, because a lot of the unexpected interactions of this sort, they serve as the glue that binds people who would otherwise be completely siloed. So this is all pretty well known, and we've been documenting this for a while with remote working. It's not all bad news, though. We also know that working remotely can be an advantage, particularly in the sense that in face-to-face settings, often differences in status or seniority can play a very strong role in determining how groups make decisions. So the colloquial term is the opinion of the highest paid person in the room, and that can have inordinate weight in some conversations. But in remote settings, that may not be true, which can be an advantage. So there are some advantages of this sort of non-face-to-face co-located work, which we've known about for a while. And the last thing we've known about is there are different strategies to cope with being remote. So the basic approach here is to try and partition work in such a way that people can work remotely without having to be in constant contact. So we call this the modularity strategy, or sometimes working blind, because this is creating silos by design. The other alternatives are trying to work using ongoing communication, either on phone calls or video chat, which you could say is equivalent to seeing the face. But the last and most interesting alternative is seeing the hands or seeing the work, where you don't necessarily get into video conference calls with people, but you rely instead on the fact that you can see the work they're doing. And when it's transferred over to you, you can pick it up, make changes and run with it. So this is all pretty well known. And we also knew that the tendency is to default to video, to seeing the face, when you're forced to work remotely, rather than relying adequately on techniques like seeing the hands or seeing the work. Now, all that said, there is something new about working remotely as a consequence of COVID. And I think the biggest novelty here is it's not a choice. So earlier, all the reports which told us that people were experiencing productivity improvements because of working from home or working remotely, that sample came from a set of people who had chosen to work from home or were allowed to work from home. It's also the case that working from home today means working from home for everybody, not just a few people in the organization, but But not only your colleagues, it also means your spouse and your kids. So you're working from home in an environment where you have to balance all these competing pressures, plus your work life. So these two factors really made Marco and me think about, do we really feel confident that we can take what we knew from our past work and slap it onto understanding what's happening now? And the answer was no. So we decided to run this survey, which was launched in February. It was primarily targeted at INSEAD alumni and their related networks on LinkedIn. But I think it gives a reasonable slice of reality of how people were just beginning to react to working remotely in response to COVID, starting from around mid-February onwards. So I'm going to turn it over to Marco to walk us through some of the key results, if that's okay.
Yeah, great. Good. Marco, over to you.
Oh, yes. One of the biggest results was the fact that the organization were more ready from a technical point of view versus an organizational point of view. So what we found out is that 80% of our respondents said that they were satisfied with the technology, so that they agreed or strongly agreed that the technology was able to support them working remotely. While on the other side, from a point of organizational readiness, just 52% consider their manager as supportive of for them working remotely, and consider only 62% of organizational procedures of being supportive for their working remotely.
Marco, just so I'm clear, so basically 50% of the managers were not in a position or weren't managing properly or to the satisfaction of the employee. Is that what the data is saying?
Yes.
So, wow.
Basically, it is particularly interesting in a sense that you can see that there's somewhat a gap.
And would I be right in saying then that, I mean, if we just take a step back and talk about the technology, and this is something Panish mentioned, but the technology is, let's say, it's reasonably good and obviously is getting better. Presumably, as 5G comes in, it'll get even better. So technology, even if it doesn't improve from where we are today, is not the problem.
Yeah, I would also say that, I mean, technology might have been a problem, but it was the first thing the organizations and managers focused on. So it's clear, we're talking about an all remote setting. So the first prescription is get the technology right, because technology is all, the all remote work is all digital work. But on the other side, I also somewhat believe that there's another explanation on that. So that while from a technological point of view, companies were already adopting technologies that would have facilitated working on remote. So the COVID-19 shock would just make this transition in faster. So it pushed, was a burst for this transition. While on the other side, the trends in organizational design, on the way organizations were managed, was completely different. In a sense that there was an increasing trend in organizational design, in somewhat questioning the relevance of authority and hierarchy. There was an increased flattening of organization with biggest teams. And clearly, instead, all remote work calls for the opposite. So all remote work might call for smaller teams and a stronger exercise of hierarchy, and a stronger exercise of coordination by the managers and management of information by the managers. So it calls manager for a more active role than the ones that was there before.
What you're saying, I think, is, I mean, which is really interesting. Of course, we all go to work and we do what we've done and we kind of done for years, and we have a hierarchy in place. What you're saying is the fact that everyone is working from home right now means that we need a different managerial style and a different way in which we get work done, which I guess is something that Panish mentioned, which is how do you hand over work to someone without having to get on a call for an hour or 2 hours to explain what you've been doing. So are we talking about having to sort of fundamentally redesign the process of work in order for people to continue to be more productive working from home?
Somewhat, yes. I would be slightly more cautious in a sense that the only suggestion that we might give is simply to stop a little bit and think carefully about this thing. So think carefully about how the work is allocated and how you coordinate within your team and your organization. So that's simply saying, stop a little bit and consider whether there are other solutions, like, for instance, modularization or working asynchronously. They may be more conducive to all remote work, so working on remote, and especially more conducive in this type of situation, where, as Panish mentioned, you are in a situation where there are other competing forces that compete on the time, on your working time. So you have, for instance, you have kids at home. Kids at home ask for your attention in the same moment in which you are working. So in this case, there's competing attention from work and private life. And in this moment, they are conflating in the same time. So solution that may be more asynchronous may work very well in this type of conditions.
And maybe we move on to the talk about the data that you pulled from the survey that focused on productivity. I know it's self-reporting, but maybe can you run through some of the information that you pulled out and what that's telling us?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, yes, I agree let me restate that, but we rely on self-reported data. What we found out is that 40% of the respondents claimed that they were more productive. 37% claimed that there was no change in productivity, and 23% of them claimed that they were less productive. So their self-reported productivity was lower when they were forced to work from home due to the COVID-19 shock. I mean, then we can somewhat open the discussion on the value of relying on self-reported data. We somewhat believe that this is a good proxy. First of all, because, I mean, it was important to get data in time, and self-reported data, the data that you can collect more fastly. And on the other side, I would also say that the type of jobs in which the outcomes are easily measurable are the type of job that may be more amenable for solution like modularization. So if we just focus on observable outcomes and observable output, so observable productivity, not self-reported productivity, we would have run the risk of focusing on just a subset of organizations, which is not what we were interested in. But of course, it may be somewhat biased, the reporting of self-productivity. And on the other side, it speaks about individual self-reported productivity. This doesn't mean that this, even an increase in productivity, may be lost in the integration of productivity of the individual at the organizational level.
And I think there's a real value to self-reporting because, of course, if you feel that you're more productive, there's probably a good chance that you are, without that sounding silly, but and at least that means you think you're doing more, which is a positive thing. So I'm sure there were both positives and negatives to this. Can you just go through, maybe talk a little bit about what the feedback was in terms of why people thought they were more productive? Because it's a big percentage, 40 plus percent,
yeah,
is clearly statistically kind of interesting.
It is, absolutely. And I think that we identified that through statistical methods, and we found out that one dimension that was relevant was hierarchical levels. We split the hierarchical levels in three. So there were managers of managers, managers of only subordinates, though they didn't have any subordinate that managed someone else, and simply the part of subordinates. And we found out that the ones that reported higher self-reported productivity were the managers of managers, so the ones that are at a higher level in the organization. And the explanation might be multiple, might be simply a wealth effect, in a sense that people at a higher hierarchical level may have more appropriate space to work from home, especially in cities in which you have strong constraint in terms of space of your house. Higher income will lead to a broader space in your house to isolate and work properly. Well, on the other side, one other potential explanation is that people at a higher hierarchical level could manage better their own time instead of being continuously within the company. So they were able to cut some more time for themselves. One other positive correlate of productivity is work-life balance. So people that stated that they had a better work-life balance in the weeks in which they were working remotely report that they also had higher self-reported productivity. One other interesting dimension is that commuting avoidance, so avoiding commuting itself, was a positive predictor of productivity. And one other aspect was also that just having even a little previous experience in working remotely was a positive predictor of self-reported productivity. And instead, when we talk about the negatives, on one side, we saw that the people that reported a lower self-reported productivity were the ones that missed the most social interaction with colleagues. And that was the other aspect that is interesting, is that it was irrespective of the mode of the need of communication due to the task that they were performing. But it was simply due to socialization. So people would rely on the office and interaction with colleagues for socialization purposes. And there's this important social dimension of the office that becomes even more important if you think about it. In a situation in which you cannot compensate for the absence of interaction in the office with interaction with your own community, because you cannot have much social or at least physical interaction with people within your community, which is something that we observe in all remote companies, in which basically the many people compensate their social interaction within the company with social interaction within their community. And then one obvious negative.
Pick up, because I think it's a really important point, and you've emphasized it, but it's social interaction that they're missing, not business interaction. Because, of course, and I think Panish mentioned this at the beginning, we always talk about those water cooler moments, that go and have a cup of coffee with someone, discuss a problem. So those serendipitous collisions that people have in the office that drive productivity, we say. And yet what people are missing is not that, but it's a social interaction. Just to make sure I've got the data, I'm understanding the data correctly.
Well, that's correct. So I want to emphasize Marco's point. The results are the same whether you control for the kind of work people do. In other words, people whose work requires them to meet lots of people and people whose work does not, both report that lack of social connectivity is harming their production.
Interesting. So, I mean, I guess the inference is that those water cooler moments maybe aren't as important as we thought they were.
They're important not for coordination, but for motivation.
Yeah.
So they're not about work coordination. They're just about keeping people engaged and excited about coming into work.
Yeah, which of course talks to the whole work-life balance when we are humans, exactly, who like social interaction, and that fuels our ability to do good work.
Correct.
And you can't necessarily separate one from the other completely without missing the point. Fascinating. Marco, well, what about the size type of company? I don't know how deep your data is. Does it distinguish between those elements?
Yeah, it does. It does, absolutely. And interestingly, there was no effect on self-reported productivity. So while the respondent was working in a small, medium, or very big size company, there seems to be no effect on a company size. The same applies for industry and even nature of the work. I mean, by nature of the work means whether they were taking decision or they were producing an intangible output. I would say that one interesting point is mostly related to company size and industry. You know, sometimes there's an argument, especially for industry, that someone claim, oh, our industry cannot work remotely. It is partially true. But on the other side, we need to take into account what are the respondents that participated to our survey, which are mostly knowledge workers. So in this respect, what this survey can tell us is that instead knowledge work instead might look the same. So the office work across different industries may be more similar than we might expect. So that's why we might not find this very strong effect of industry, company size, and nature of work.
Interesting. And maybe, Panish, we can talk about that or what this means in a little more detail. So I obviously understand this is early days in the whole pandemic, although I guess we all think like it's been going on for a long time, but it's a relatively short period of time. And obviously your data has been collected recently. But I'd be interesting to kind of get a sense of what this is beginning to tell you, or what does it infer might need to happen at a managerial level if we're going to continue to do more homeworking, let's say.
So to me, this was actually not that surprising once we had tested the data a couple of times, because the reality is most organizational hierarchies are what I call separated hierarchies. So production and coordination are separated. So production mostly happens at frontline and lower level work. And as you climb the layers of the hierarchy, the managerial work is quite distinct. And as Marco said, the evidence is clear that managerial work is broadly similar, regardless of whether you are in logistics or in hospitality or in entertainment or manufacturing. Once you climb a few layers, the work is actually pretty similar. And given that it's similar and it can be all done in an office context, there's no reason it can't be done remotely. So that's a pretty radical proof, which I don't think we would have obtained without COVID-19. Because the natural tendency is for people to argue about the exceptionalism of their industry, right? And it would never work in our industry. Well, the evidence says it does. So this is actually a pretty important wake-up moment, I think, for organization design. To ask yourself, are we really using office space and physical interaction as preciously as it really is? It's not something you slap across the board for everything. You use it very strategically, very importantly for things which really need it, right? And I'm sure this is something that you guys are actually better equipped to think about in the real estate industry than we are. But I do think this is going to be a really important question.
And do you think, I mean, is that, so maybe we could talk about where you're, or kind of what's next in a sense with the data. It's, you've run the survey, you've done it through INSEAD alumni. So it's across, as you say, multiple industries, multiple countries. What's the follow-up, do you think, from your point of view? Is there a sort of interesting enough data here that means that you're going to keep looking at this?
We are continuing to collect the data, and we are doing a weekly or fortnightly barometer of how people's productivity, self-reported productivity, is changing over the weeks of this crisis. So we have data which is updated almost every week or 2 weeks or so. But the broader point is that we now think we can use this data as a basis to construct a report card, if you like, for a company on how ready it is to work remotely. So given the sample averages, you can benchmark yourself and ask, where are we ready? Where are we underprepared? And this is going to get really important going forward, because once the pandemic has been declared to have subsided, if not disappeared, things will get slowly back towards normalcy. So the question really is, at that point, do you revert to what we were before January 2020? Or do we use what we've learned in this period, including from the kind of data we've gathered, to basically re-engineer your organization? I suspect the latter, because the pressure that's also going to be acting at the same time is on cost reduction. So there'll be a general push towards restructuring anyway. And it would be a real shame to lose the opportunity to not just restructure, but also reorganize.
Yeah, and I think just to sort of maybe in a sense recap it at the beginning, that the data is telling you that the technology is not the issue. And I think we all probably agree it's only going to get better because we have a very competitive technology industry, which is always coming up with new ideas. And as speeds get faster and some of the issues go away, I think for me, the issue becomes, how do we work differently, and how do we, and probably have to train people to work differently, which is where your research comes in order for this to work. Because if we try and replicate the office at home, which is, I think, and this is not, I think that's what people are doing just because we've got to get our work done. So we just try and do the same work in the same way, but we do it on a video call rather than sat next to someone. What you're suggesting is the process of work can change pretty fundamentally to allow this to continue in a way that is better for the organization and also should be able to drive out cost.
Absolutely. I mean, just the benefits to both individuals, companies, the economy, and the environment of time saved on commuting are just too large to ignore at this point, right? So rather than thinking about showing up at work as the default and once in a while you're allowed to work from home, in the limit, it should be exactly the opposite. So the default is you work from home or from some other location, but you only come in when you really need to. And that sort of thinking might completely change the way we look at how organizations work.
And the research that you've done so far, does it point in a direction which says what will people need to come to the office for?
So not directly in our research, but there are colleagues who've worked on these issues. And reading their research, what we know is that there is an advantage to being physically co-located, particularly when the issue is iterated problem solving and when it involves building trust. So these are processes for which we don't have good substitutes in remote work, right? It's not impossible to do it. You can form trust online. All you have to do is look at our teenagers playing online multiplayer games, and they form teams and they learn to trust each other. But I don't think the evidence shows that it's as good as doing it face-to-face. So trust formation requires physical co-location. Interactive, iterated problem solving still seems to benefit from being in the same place. For most other things, at least the option of doing it remotely is on the table.
And maybe Marco, go on, Marco.
Just adding that clearly, then the whole modularization discussion basically still pops in. So there may be some companies from which the benefits are clear, absolutely clear. So the ones that can literally fully modularize their job, so work blindly, as Panish described before, I think they are the ones that are the best candidate to not go back to the business as usual. All the others, basically, I guess that for the ones that then will figure out that still seeing the face, so being continuously on video calls, is the core solution for this problem working remotely, there might be even the candidates that are gonna go back to business as usual in terms of going all back to the office. While instead, the ones that will consider and will be able to move to an asynchronous solution, those are the type of candidates that are somewhat borderline. So the idea is that for the ones that can work asynchronously or that can modularize, those are the ones, the candidates that will not go back business as usual. And I think that what we thought about, you know, the real estate environment is that that would be the biggest prediction problem that you have to address. And the suggestion is somewhat to wear the shoes of the client. So seeing, okay, if I'm a client, if I'm a company in this sector that has to face this problem, is that perform this type of task, can they be modularized? Can they be moved in an asynchronous way so that then you really reap the benefits of working remotely? So getting more flexibility and managing in a better way work-life balance. If the answer is yes, then it means that that client might be one of the clients that might run the risk of, you know, keeping working remotely. If the answer is no, it might be that they're going to go back to the business as usual.
Great. And I think, Panish, maybe just to finish up and round this off, I know I loved your expression when I heard you giving this, the webinar, the lifelong learning, that the genie is out of the bottle. Can you just explain that a little? In terms of where you think we need to go next?
I think I was using it to refer to the idea that the default assumption that people have to be physically co-located in an office, that assumption has been invalidated, right? And the proof is in front of us. So we have been working in this way, not necessarily very happily or as productively as we always were, but from company after company, sector after sector, we have proof that you don't need to be physically in one location to still get things done. So that's the genie which I'm referring to, because going forward, I think we have to take that into account as an alternative path to design the organization. So that's where I think fundamental changes are coming.
Thank you for that. And thank you to both of you for coming online. I think the data that you're producing is fascinating and actually is a great help to the real estate industry. It's something that we sorely lack. So, Panish and Marco, really nice talking to you, and good luck with the research.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.